Now sit back with your favorite beverage, take a walk, or go for a drive while you enjoy today's episode of Marketing Unboxed, where we're taking the lid off of our marketing knowledge and generously sharing it with you. Thanks for joining me today, and I have Ryan Glanzer here. He's an email marketing extraordinaire professional, been doing it since 2006, right?
That is right, sir.
Nice. And so opening question, and this could be my opening question for everybody. We'll see, just kicking this thing off. But you know, what is it about marketing that excites you?
Oh, good question. What excites me about marketing? For me, really, it's the one thing I always tell people is the testing. You think you're going to know what's going to appeal to people, but you really don't until you go out there and you test 100 different things and see what sticks. And it's never what you think is going to stick. Although there are some parts of email that I've gotten down and I know it's going to work, but a lot of the exciting part really is rolling out some new test and finding out what sticks with a particular audience.
Yeah. I mean, I think a mantra of all marketers is always be testing, right? ABT.
Oh yeah.
No matter what it is, email, SEO. SEO is a little more difficult because it's just a lot of time that has to go by sometimes, but paid search testing is key. What's an example? Speaking of that, you know, you said that sometimes things don't always work out like you thought they would. And I think that happens a lot because we're dealing with people. They're irrational. They're emotional when they make decisions, right? What's something that you've done that you didn't think was going to work and then kind of surprised you?
Mm-hmm. One great example that comes to mind was an email creative test. We did a three-way split. And normally we don't do a ton of email creative testing because it's so labor intensive to come up with a whole new design or template. This time for this particular audience, we actually did three completely unique creatives. And the scenario was, this was a senior audience. Seniors would come onto our website and state that they were interested in a medical alert device. And we were sending them the same confirmation email we would send everyone, which was the standard company template with the information on here's what you asked for, here's what to expect next, here's a phone number you can call, here's some cross-sell information. Email tanked. Nobody was clicking on it in the senior audience. And a couple of colleagues in that senior vertical, neither with any background in email whatsoever, came to me with ideas that they thought would really resonate with this audience. And I said, yeah, let's give it a shot. Tell me what you got. I'll see if I can design them. So the first guy comes to me and he had a printout of what looked like the most 1995 email looking email you've ever seen. It even had like a picture of a printer on it, print this email button. It was designed after the US Social Security, or no, the US Passport application confirmation email as it looked many years ago. This guy had always thought that this would resonate with a senior audience. No modern stylization at all. Very transactional looking, very governmental looking. It did look official. I said, okay, I'll see what I can do. The other guy comes to me with an email that was highly graphical. Something with a very vibrant, like tie-dye background with like magenta and purple and fuchsia. Huge email or huge phone CTA in big yellow letters, which was animated and flashing. What else? Giant smiley face emojis in the background. And then like a picture of this younger woman with a headset on. I'm like, this is the spammiest looking thing I've ever seen, was his concept. I put it together in something that looked a little better for email. But so we've got these two crazy ideas and then our standard template. You know, both colleagues loved the versions that I had come up with and said, let's test it. Let's get it out there, 33% of the audience. So, you know, you had email A that looked like it was designed on Windows 3.1. And you had the other one that literally looked like, you know, the little Vegas call girl cards you get when you're walking down the street. And that's really what it looked like. And I said, these are both doomed to fail. These are not going to provide any sort of lift. And obviously they both killed it because we're telling the story. They both destroyed the standard template that I had put together so badly. We ended up just cutting mine out and testing theirs A/B, and over time the transactional one won out. And you wouldn't believe how many people clicked the print this email button on this thing. So I apologize. Our beagle's walking in and out in the background.
I think it knew we were on a podcast and just decided to walk in and walk right back. Didn't even do anything. Just
Well, the phones lit up. I mean, obviously they knew they're from the senior vertical. They knew that seniors wanted to talk to someone in person, not click a button. So they were right on that front. Both of them had phone number CTAs, and they both numbers lit up compared to the one that I had buried in my email. And, in the end, the transactional one won out. But the test proved to me and our email team that we can't just rely on one standard template for all audiences. And from that point on, we began to tailor things a little bit better towards different demographics and or different verticals. The senior one especially, it had a complete the lift we were looking for that I didn't think that email was going to provide.
That's really fascinating, I think. In email marketing and marketing in general, you know, it's kind of hammered home about personas, right? And a lot of times we create them, but sometimes maybe we just don't go far enough in really understanding the demographic or psychographics of the audience we're trying to reach and how we can send out the same message, but they're getting to different audiences who may have different levels of proficiencies and levels of comfort with things. And both of those things you mentioned really harkened back to the glory days of the 90s. And that's when that audience kind of got into email, and they maybe haven't evolved with the changes, right? So that's what they know and are used to and are comfortable with. That's what feels safe to them. For us, if we got that, we'd say that is not safe. That is, you know, kind of sketchy and old school. Drive red flags for us, but for them, it was safe, nostalgic, and
And there's a big familiarity factor at play for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's fascinating. Thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely.
Do you find that with email, does it have a lot of last click attribution? Are you getting a lot of conversions through email, or is it kind of a bump and then you're seeing things downstream, or do you have the visibility?
You know, our business is pretty unique in the sense that most people convert on other channels. We don't really end up seeing the individual's contact information at all until they get from an email standpoint, until they've already converted, in a sense. So what I'm doing is essentially trying to show people other options, some similar categories that they might also like. So it's kind of a tough question for me to answer specifically with this business, in the sense that we don't see someone until they've converted. That's when email comes into play. I've tried to find ways of saying, hey, are you sure email is getting proper credit for this? Over the years, and we are, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing broken. It's just, unfortunately, email's kind of the bottom pillar in this particular organization as far as revenue generation goes.
Has it been a bigger, revenue generating factor in other companies you've worked for?
Yeah, absolutely. In a more traditional e-commerce business, I can say I was at Callaway Golf from 2011 to 2017, and email was the number one channel. It was the biggest revenue generating channel because people, especially at Callaway, they wanted the latest and greatest. Maybe that's not true with all brands, but with Callaway, it was the big birth of driver came out, made that big comeback. The first time people heard about it, you know, 2012, 2013, stuff like that, was they're waiting for that email to come in. Not so much on social media at that point in time. But they relied heavily on email. We had a very loyal email database and new sales. And, you know, email exclusive type sales with our pre-owned stuff really moved the needle significantly, way more so than any other channel.
Wow. Yeah. I think a lot of companies, especially e-commerce, right? It's still a huge driver of maybe not leads and things like that, because sometimes they're already customers, but maybe upsells, cross sells, just engagement, building on that brand loyalty and trust, right? So I think email is still extremely valuable.
Extremely valuable.
When it comes to email, you know, what do you think when you see beginners come into the game, right? What are some of the more common mistakes you see beginners make when they get into email that they just may not even understand coming in?
Well, I can go at that from a couple of different perspectives. I will say some businesses don't really understand email programs and what goes into it and how much the resource it's going to take to make it succeed. For instance, businesses don't necessarily always understand that, like, that someone from the marketing team could just jump over and do some emails here and there. That's kind of a conception, is that email could just be like, oh, take an hour here and there, and this guy can build out a newsletter and move on with his other tasks. You know, it's not. It's at least for even a mid-sized company who's going to rely on email at all as a viable channel, it's at least one person's full-time job, if not 2, 3, 4 and up for a successful company. You know, an email marketer has to do a lot of copywriting. They have to be at least a marginal designer. I mean, granted, you're probably going to get some copy and design from some places, but you have to be able to put it together in the shape of an email. You're also working heavily with data. You know, where does the data come from and how do you segment that? How do you get it into the system? How do you get it out? What are you allowed to share? You know, I've kind of broken it down, Travis, into the 7 D's, Ryan Glanzer's 7 D's of email marketing, that I think, especially this would be very helpful for recruiters who haven't maybe dealt with email marketing before. I always preach these 7 D's of email marketing. If you can find a candidate or a group of candidates who can cover these 7 areas, you'll be set. The 7 D's are devising strategy, designing emails, developing emails, data analytics, the dynamic and personalization part of it, the deployment, and the deliverability. Or is that 7 or is that 8? The 7 D's. Yeah. it's kind of rare. I mean, I feel like I encompass all of those things. And when I'm hiring for people under me in our department, I also look for those 7 things. I bring that up on every interview. Can you devise a strategy? Have you devised email strategy before? Or are you just the type of person who can just handle the coding or just handle the design? You know, we look for somebody who's actually had a part in thinking through an entire automation or an entire customer lifecycle. The design side, I mean, my background actually is in arts. You know, I have a degree in computer graphic design and web development. So I kind of, the design and development parts kind of go hand in hand for me. But some people, you know, specialize a little bit more in one or the other. It's important that you're able to at least put together some moderate looking graphics, or at the very least, you know, crop things down to fit in a certain space if you're not getting graphics from another department. The development part, thankfully today, I don't have to rely too much on development. Most modern ESPs already have the WYSIWYG drag and drop type things built in, which saves so much time. And, you know, I always used to hate these things because I thought I want to make an email look exactly the way I want. And I don't think that these WYSIWYG editors are going to be able to handle it. Well, that's not true at all anymore. The one that we use in our ESP, Iterable, any design you could possibly conceive, it will easily be able to handle it and make it look good on all devices. You know, everything's automatically responsive. Next thing, of course, is data and analytics. You're dealing with a lot of data, sometimes millions of records, and those millions of records may have hundreds of fields each. You know, how are you going to manage that? How are you going to use it? Are you going to use it to segment? Are you going to use it to personalize the body of an email? There's a lot that goes into that. And then you might have 1.5 million contacts sitting in your database, but you have to really dig in and figure out exactly what to do with that data, which is such a big part of it. And that kind of goes hand in hand with the dynamic part as well. We are not there yet at my company, but I strive to get there with an email, a newsletter that goes out. to our broad database should probably be entirely dynamic. Each section of the email should be pulling from somewhere else, from the hero image to the, like, we include some news in it. We include some links to products or services that might be of interest to the consumer. These should all realistically be pulling from like a database or a library of content assets. That's one of the big seven D's here, I think, is can anybody can probably design a static email, but when you start talking about dialing it down to each individual user, you want to make it as dynamic and personalized as possible. The deployment part, of course, I guess that's kind of a gray area. Like, what does that mean exactly? You hit the send button, that's deployment. But at the same time, so much goes into that. That's the detail-oriented part of it. Can you go through this giant checklist and make sure that every last link is correct, every bit of copy is correct, this list is correct, the suppression list is correct, the timing, all this, like, detail-oriented is the kind of what I mean by deployment, and that's a big part of email too. And that's probably the one of the seven that I struggle the most with. I've always been the type to just rush through, get it out the door. And then deliverability is number seven. And I could sidebar on that one for an entire session. That's probably the biggest struggle or misconception businesses have is the idea that you can just send a newsletter to your entire database seven times a week and it's going to end up in their inbox in front of them every time. There's so much wrong with that thought concept.
How would you define, you know, what is deliverability? Because I think there might be confusion around what it is, like you said, right? What is deliverability?
Well, when you deploy an email, is it getting to where you intend it to go? Will the reader see it? And it seems like, well, of course, we have their email address. Why wouldn't they see it? Well, if it delivers at all, you know, it could go to the spam folder. And if it goes to Gmail, it could get buried in promotions tab. It could go to a different tab, something like that. So is the intended recipient receiving this message? And people, organizations I've worked for, many organizations that I've either worked for or freelanced for or contracted for over the years, just completely don't understand the concept of deliverability or want to try to ignore it to maximize their list size. You know, I worked at a home security company. It no longer exists, so I guess I can talk openly about it, but they largely hired me because all of their emails went to spam in Gmail. And when you end up in spam in Gmail, it's almost impossible to get out. Like, it's one of the trickier things ever. So in order to avoid getting in spam, you have to practice good list hygiene. That means if you've got a form on your website, people signing up for the email list, you don't just put them all into a pile of like, here's our email list and just send all of them every email every time. You've really got to watch that over time. You have to say, well, this person hasn't opened in 3 months. Should we continue sending to them? The answer is usually no. And people say, well, why not? Why shouldn't I send them? What, they might open this time. That's one email address that we worked hard to get that now we're just not going to send to them. And I would say, well, if you're sending to your entire list every time, say you've got 1 million contacts, the average lifespan of an email address is, I think, 3 years. So, and business email addresses are even less than that. They're like oftentimes a year, I think. So you're talking about so much dead weight, email addresses that are undeliverable, that are bouncing, that simply don't exist. Somebody typed it in wrong. There's bad syntax or something. You've got to clean the list. You absolutely have to. There's several ways to go about that. You know, you can do that using an external validation tool. It's a good habit, especially if you're starting up with a new ESP, to just run your entire database through one of these tools. And it'll cost you a few $1,000, you know, a penny per ping or something, but so worth it. You know, something like Fresh Address or the checker.co, put your entire database through there. You'll be alarmed at how many email addresses are going to come back as undeliverable. Why is that important? Because people like Gmail, Hotmail, AOL, Yahoo, whoever, well, not so much AOL, but all the other major ones, they all have these algorithms in place that are looking for engagement, you know, Gmail, especially if they see that only 7% of your list is opening emails on a regular basis, that looks really bad in their eyes and you're on thin ice with them. and you keep doing that and you add more and more emails to this list and fewer people engage. And pretty soon Gmail makes the decision for you. This is spam. And then it's almost impossible to get out of, at which point, you know, you can sit, you basically have to start over. Only the people who have been opening can remain on your list. You start, you go all the way down. I don't know how these people even found it. Maybe they've moved you to the primary tab or said you're not spam, or they go through their spam folder and they find you and say, and they're still opening their emails from there, but you can only send to people who are actively engaging at that point and continue on that pace until you're back in the inbox. And it's with Gmail, which, you know, is like 60% of the email market now, just borderline impossible. So you have to attack it up front.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was going to say Gmail is probably the lion's share of personal email accounts. And I think it's such a tough sell, really, when to executives, you know, the people outside of marketing who may not quite understand it, that think, hey, we have this huge list, let's go send our every email to every one of them, right? And it just does not work that way. And yeah, like you do have to clean it up, get rid of the dead weight, get rid of the inactives. And the inactives are tough, you know, I get it, because you worked hard to build that list and now you've got to purge them. But if they're not opening, you know, what's the point anyway? Yes.
Literally more harm than good.
Right. Exactly.
And I've seen it at that home security company I was at, you know, they think about this. If your industry is like a one-time purchase, like a home security system, for instance, if I express interest in this product at some point in time, you're generally going to make a decision on that within like 30 to 60 days. And then you're done. You know, you don't want to keep hearing from this home security company 3, 4, 5 years down the road. That's kind of the mindset of some of these people, is that, well, I don't want to cut them off. They might convert. Every once in a while, somebody does convert, but you've got to figure out when to draw that line. And it's different for every organization, of course.
That's interesting, because all businesses are different, right? The customers are different, behavior, the sales cycle, the lifetime value. And what you mentioned there with home security, there is a lot of my audience are recruitment marketers, and that could probably be pretty similar as far as the timeline, right? If someone contacts you about an open role and you fill it, or they take another role, they're not going to want to hear back from you in 3 months, 6 months, right? So then it's how long is it advantageous to hang on to them and maybe have a long-term strategy to where you reach out every so often, a couple of years, a year, just to see, hey, you know, are you happy with your system? Anything else we can do? Or, well, I don't know about security systems, but maybe there's upsells or cross sells or things like that as well. But yeah, how would you just start from scratch, or would you continue to ping those people, but just very infrequently?
Yeah, that's a great point you brought up. I should have mentioned before. Yeah. When you're scrubbing these lists and removing people, I don't mean completely remove them from the database. I mean, just remove them from your like regular newsletter cadence or whatever automation they happen to be in. Yeah. You still want to keep them around if they're deliverable. And yeah, like you said, I would infrequently check in. That's a great idea. And I think at Callaway, what we would do is, if you hadn't opened an email, I don't know if we'd went with a time frame or a certain number of emails, but if you hadn't opened an email in X amount of time, you know, you would no longer get our newsletters. But there still were some instances where you would fall into like a targeted send or something, maybe geographical, like, oh, we noticed there's a event going on within 50 miles of your zip code, that sort of thing. We might include them on, but not the regular newsletter cadence. Mm.
Yeah. And then newsletters, versus email marketing. I mean, it's underneath email marketing, but there's different types of strategies, and newsletters are one strategy, and what nurturing is another. And, you know, how are newsletters different than other types of email marketing?
Yeah. And in my instance, what we look at is, you know, we've got these automations that customers go through initially when they've expressed interest in a certain category that will keep them on for a few weeks, really try to tell them about, you know, sell the product or the brand, whatever it is. Here's the advantages, or in some cases, you know, maybe here's some things you might want to look out for, or here's some other places you might want to get quotes from. That's all like one set of email marketing. That's all automated. We know they're in the market right now. It's timely. It's absolutely relevant to what they specifically ask to hear about. And then newsletters, once you've aged out of those automations, but you were still active and engaged at that point in time, there's still opportunity there. And that's kind of what we use newsletters for. Granted, our site is partially news. So it is newsletter literally, in that we have a news team and they write news. But the other half of that is, of course, trying to find, you know, we knew that at one point in time, this person was interested in a home warranty, you know, that probably means they're a homeowner. Here's some home related articles, things that we try to just keep them interested, keep them engaged, keep them in the loop, knowing some of their interests at least. So a newsletter can have a little bit of both in terms of here's the latest in our organization, here's the latest for about our company, and consumer news and alerts and recalls and all the stuff that you really want to hear about. And then, you know, here's something you might still be interested in as it related to your previous transaction. So that's kind of where I come from with that. But at the same time, you know, the newsletter, it's a very large one-time send. You're talking about a singular blast to hundreds of thousands of people at once, whereas the, you know, the other more targeted stuff is sending in real time for each individual person, one send after the other. So it's two very different ideas. And we kind of divide it up like that within my company. One person or two people really handle those newsletters, that a lot of thought goes into it. Brands want, and I think that's probably true of any company, like there's certain stakeholders in it, whether it's people within the company want a certain product or service or something represented. This is a good opportunity to get that in front of a large audience.
And when you're sending the newsletters, are they going out to your entire email list, or is that segmented too?
Yeah, never. We would never send to the entire list. I would, it would have to be something super, super important for me to consider pulling the trigger on, you know, sending to millions of people at once. No, I run a pretty tight ship here. I think I've learned from experience at other organizations where, you know, they said blast the whole list. It rarely works. It rarely works. It gets you into a lot of trouble. You're sending to people who are unengaged. You're sending to people whose email addresses have changed. It's not going to deliver. Those bounce rates are huge red flags. So no, I pare it down extremely tightly to only the most recently engaged. In fact, I typically say, people who are either new to the list, who have signed up explicitly in the last like 90 days, or somebody who's opened or clicked something in another email within like the last 30 days. That's pretty much it. I cut it off after that. And if you fall outside of that, eventually you've no longer clicked or interacted and you're no longer on that list. You're still there in the background. You could get pulled into a future send if it targets you in some way.
Gotcha. And what about, a rare event like snow in Texas that has an impact on your business? Is that, would companies choose to send a mass email to everyone to get ahead of any issues that may happen? Or would they still segment even an emergency type of message?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something that, you know, we're looking at actually right now. Someone in our company received an email from, I believe it was Home Advisor, during the storm, and it was clearly geo-targeted to their zip code. And I don't know if there are solutions in place where you can trigger events based on a zip code's weather. I know a ski company that does that, but this company, Home Advisor, triggered an email to someone within a zip code that they knew were being affected. And it was kind of a checklist of here, make sure all these things are in order. We're taking that same kind of approach now as kind of like a post-storm wrap up, like here's what to prepare for next time. And in that instance, yeah, I actually am just taking everybody within the affected states, and we're going to try it here. I think that's, even if people fall outside of that normal cadence of email newsletters, I think we're going to rope them into this one because it is important. And if you at one point in time signed up to hear from us, this is the kind of thing that you probably really should hear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's really something that it is recent because you're in Texas and you experienced I don't know, they calling it Snowmageddon or what's the name for that event. What are they calling that?
Yeah, I don't know. Icemageddon was how it started out, as an ice storm. I think, yeah, Snowmageddon, Icemageddon, that was kind of the nickname.
And it had rippling effects across the entire country. I'm in Spokane. I had, I get Home Chef. I started it. I was only like two shipments in. They're in California, but yet my package just got to me today that shipped on February 14th. And I can't imagine the ice is still frozen and the meat is any good. And as it was delayed, I was wondering what's going on? Where is it? When's it coming? Why is there a delay? And I had to go out and try to contact them. It took forever for them to get back to me. And then it's like, create a claim. And I'm like, that's a horrible experience. And what I expected was them to get ahead of it and contact all of their customers and say, hey, we're experiencing these issues. We understand this is going to be delayed. Don't eat the food. We're going to automatically put this money in your account if it looks like, so you don't fill out a claim. That's more work for us. We're just going to take care of it and you don't worry about it. And you'll get your next delivery on time, right? And that, none of that happened. And so is that an instance where they should have sent something out ahead of time, get ahead of it and use email as that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I can think of a couple instances in the past where I've experienced something like that too. And I was really happy with the way that the email department and these companies handle it. I think one of them was Results. It's the they make like some fun t-shirts and headbands and stuff with like TV shows and things. Anyway, I had ordered some masks, some COVID masks that got very, very delayed throughout all this. And I received an email from them basically explaining their whole situation very upfront about it, from the CEO apologizing up front, saying there's going to be delays. Here's what to do if you're not happy with this response and so on. That was a really great experience. Yeah. You're going to save yourself a lot of trouble. I know that if you get out in front of it and email everybody. I'm surprised that a company like that wouldn't have done so.
Yeah. I was surprised as well. And the company that I work for, ISM, it's a B2B, non-SaaS B2B company in Denver. And we're experiencing some product delays in getting our products and shipping them out. And last week when I was talking to our sales manager, he was talking about how, it could be a tough month. We're not going to get all the products to get out. And I mentioned to him that, times like this, they seem like they suck. They seem just, horrible, but they're also tremendous opportunities. If you can get ahead of it, communicate, use the platforms you have, like email especially, and you could turn a really bad situation into increased loyalty. Not easily, but a lot more easily than doing nothing, right?
So yeah. I'll say this too. Any company who doesn't take advantage of that is also missing out on a great email marketing opportunity for kind of a different reason. Have you ever received an email in your inbox from a company that was like, oops, we made a mistake from maybe the email marketer sent something out to the wrong audience, so there was a bad link in it or something? People love those emails. Anytime you put, oops, we made a mistake, or we apologize for the inconvenience or something like that in the subject line, it's just a huge win. People open those at an amazingly high rate. They love to catch people and other companies making mistakes. So if you didn't do it, that's another reason you should.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, it just creates that tension, right? And the only way to release that tension is to find out what did they screw up? I want to see. So yeah, that if you want to improve your deliverability, screw up, send an oops email.
Or even don't screw up. Just say that you did.
Exactly. Yeah. So good stuff, man. Good stuff. Love the 7 D's. Could talk about this all day long. But I know that we're getting close to the time we allotted, and Yeah, really, really appreciate you coming on to chat email marketing. We may have to do it again at some point down the road and do a deep dive into one area or another. But yeah, been a great conversation. And how can people find you if they want to tap into your email prowess?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'd love to chat email with anybody who's interested. You know, find me on Twitter at RC Glanzer. That's probably the best way, or Ryan Glanzer on LinkedIn. I think, I'm not sure what my URL is there, but Ryan Glanzer email marketer should get you where you need to go. Yeah, I've prepared a lot of great content here we didn't get to today, so I'm eager to continue the conversation in some other means.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we should do it again, because I have topics here as well. So yeah, I think email is still, I think, the best channel for marketers in a lot of different businesses, the most engaged. And I think it's the way, you know, what you mentioned, how you mentioned it, and the 7 D's and everything that goes into it, it's not impossible, but it's really difficult to do it and do it well and do it right. Stay out of Gmail's spam box. And I just think companies don't put as much effort into it because it is difficult. So,
I'd have to say, if there's recruiters out there listening, really don't take email marketing lightly. You've got to find somebody who can handle it. Those 7 D's is so important. Don't skimp on it. If they can only do 5 of the 7, move on. Find somebody with 7 of the 7. At the very least, build a team that has the 7 items mastered, and I think you'll be in great shape, and companies will be very, very happy with your recruiting skills.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks again. And we'll do it again sometime soon.
All right. Thanks, Travis.
And that wraps up episode number 2 of Marketing Unboxed. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please subscribe, tell a friend, help get the word out about this. We're only in episode number 2, and really want to help other marketers learn and level up. The world of marketing will be a better place when that happens. If you want to reach out to me directly, you can do so at Twitter at 509marketer, LinkedIn, TravisScott24, or hit me up on email, travis@rainierdigital.com. There's 2 I's in Rainier, RAINIER, digital.com. Got some things brewing with co-hosts and things of that nature. So stay tuned. Hope to have some updates on that soon. And that's what I've got for today. I'm out.